Javon Gibbons.
How do you not hear when I go off on this team? I don't need to do it every night. I do it often because especially those games that they lose in a row where I say it's disappointing, it's unacceptable. Brett Brown was going to lose his job if he doesn't get this team to the NBA Finals. If they don't get to the NBA Finals, the season was a failure. You didn't hear all of that? You didn't hear any of that?
Joe Torti.
What exactly have Simmons, Embiid, and the Sixers under those two guys done to merit your ridiculous for even talking about these guys in any kind of trade discussion? Like, what have they done that makes them so freaking untouchable that if you even mention either one of those guys, there's like this collective shudder and an eye roll?
The Crossover, right now on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Oh, alongside my brother, 801 here on this Wednesday night as we broadcast from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. Tyler's always producing the show. We're brothers as well. My other brother, Joe Torti. JT, what's up?
I was thinking about our intro, the Crossover intro.
Yeah.
And I was talking about it, and it's just further proof that the phones are always listening and stuff, because my YouTube recommended feed was the SNL, like, round ball rock one. Did you see this one?
Uh-uh.
Where, in addition to the music, there are also lyrics. I'll see if we can we can share that with you. I'll have Tyler pull it up at some point. I think you'll appreciate what the lyrics are to that song.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Yeah, all right. That's cool,
stuff.
Man. Yeah. Put up those lyrics.
I yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. So... Yeah, it's been fun, though. It's been fun over the course of the last couple days watching everybody losing their minds over the starting lineup for the Sixers, whether baseball's ever going to be the same again. We got more stuff that you can rip your hair out about sports changing and all kinds of stuff like that. We got a lot of stuff that we can get to tonight.
And the weird part is that, you know, with the whole thing about the baseball thing,
yeah.
Now we're just, everybody's endorsing, yes, go hit them.
Yeah.
Let's fight them.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Now, here's the other thing, right? I do wonder if we are being made to think about that through that lens, right? Instead of being like, you know, it's okay if the guy standing on second is stealing signs because, like, that guy can get beaned or whatever. But, like, it's not against the rules of baseball.
To be on second base and steal signs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally different than electronically doing it. And
well, how big of a leap is that? You know what I mean? Like, the question is, like, would that stuff be happening in the 1910s or whatever? Mm-hmm. Is it more of the game is evolving and so, you know, the earpiece solution needs to happen or, like, you know, something like that where the counters to that kind of thing need mm-hmm. to evolve? Instead, we've got everybody talking about how much of a disgrace it is. So now we're like, okay, well, I guess it's a disgrace. Everybody says it's a disgrace. And I started just wondering about that. I'm like, eh. Are we thinking about that the right way? Because if Robert Manfred's not treating it like it's a huge deal and he's not going to slam everybody, you got to have a couple people suspended for a year, and those guys were so important to their team that, you know, they were just, the Astros were like, yeah, no, we're good. And the Red Sox were like, no, we're good. We don't need to worry about this. You know what I mean? Like, I was thinking about that. And I was like, eh, I don't know if that's the message that we're being sent, that it's such a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because the punishments haven't been a huge deal.
No, they have not. And now everything is starting to really come down on the guy where he needs to be out. He needs to do more to kind of help himself right? Where he can fix this before the season gets underway.
Right.
Because it's going to be such a long season for these guys, for the fans, everything, everybody involved, just simply because you didn't do things the right way.
No.
And especially if you knew this a couple of years ago, like it's being reported and everybody's reporting stuff so far has been accurate, then it's really bad.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty extensive, it seems.
Yeah,
so. It
is extensive. So we have extensive time to talk about those things
yes.
here tonight. And before we get to that a little bit more, asking you, you know, what I've been asking the people over the last couple of hours, starting at 6 o'clock. Number one, Joe. The fifth starter.
Yes.
Probably going to be Glenn Robinson, the third, replacing Al Horford coming off the bench. And we know Al Horford is important, so what will he do? He will be ending the games a lot of times, depending on what the lineup looks like.
Sure.
If they're winning the game. Then Glenn Robinson started the second half for Furkan Korkmaz, who struggled against the Los Angeles Clippers in the win. But that defense... Overall, that Glenn Robinson gives you the two-way ability, now shooting 39% from behind the three-point line with his defense. He gets to give you a different look
to the Sixers offense with Tobias Harris can go back to the four and Ben Simmons can be the overall basketball player that he is, and Embiid being Embiid, Josh Richardson still in the lineup, gives you a different wrinkle to the team with Glenn Robinson staying in that spot. And I don't have a problem with it. I just lean more Matisse Thybulle with the starting unit, with Glenn Robinson coming in for Horford. I mean, with Horford, Alec Burks, however they decided to do it, Mike Scott mixing him in there as well. Where do you lean right now with the fifth starter? Is Glenn Robinson the choice, the right choice?
Well, his acquisition hasn't changed what I said from before the acquisition happened, which is that Horford should be on the bench and Thybulle should be in the starting lineup to begin with. Now, I feel stronger about it now, or more strongly about it now, because as far as I'm concerned, Thybulle's not a rookie anymore. Like, you've been through more than double what the college season has been for, you know, Thybulle for the last 4 years at Washington. So, like, he has been through enough now where he shouldn't be processing the system. He shouldn't be processing what it's like to be an NBA player. Like, you're ready to go at this point. I get shielding him early on. As far as I'm concerned, he's battle-tested
now.
Yeah,
no longer.
He's ready to go.
Yeah, he's already hit the rookie wall.
Exactly, yeah. He hit the rookie wall. I think that he's kind of bounced back nicely and kind of gone through the rookie wall, too. Had the injury. He's come back from the injury. I like Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks and those guys. I think that the Sixers got better when they made those acquisitions.
Sure.
I think that you make it a little bit worse if those guys are your starters instead of pieces that you can go to when you need them or against the second units of teams and stuff like that. So I think that that's the way I would go. You know, Thybulle, and then, you know, Robinson would probably be my second guy off the bench if I needed, you know, somebody who's a wing there or something like that. Horford's further down on my list. Like, I'd have Horford as Embiid needs a rest.
Well, that's a given.
That's
at the 6 minute mark, he's going to be in the game.
Or specialty stuff. Giannis. Like, those sorts of things. Like, that's what I see Al Horford's role being moving forward here. I don't know if he's going to be excited about that or not, but he didn't sound super excited about it when he was like, yeah, Brett told me that's my role moving forward. There wasn't a big smile on his face when he was saying that. So
no, he's not thrilled about that. He should not be thrilled about it. Of course, he's a competitor.
Of course,
he wants to start the game. That's what he knows he needs to do. So I understand that. And I agree. Matisse Thybulle was my choice. You made great points. Battle tested. No longer a rookie at this point. It's going to be a new season when they get to the playoffs. Right now, he's in the thick of things.
Yeah.
He knows what's what. He knows everything. And he gets this rest from the All-Star break. Comes back, legs a little bit fresh, ready to go. Insert him into the starting lineup, and you keep it this way where you have Glenn Robinson to come in, where he can spell just like Matisse Thybulle can. Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons, they can mix things around a little bit the way they need to mix things around. Neither one of them, it's there's no wrong choice.
Right.
Preference, I'm with you, Matisse Thybulle.
Well, when you look at the team identity, and I still believe that this team's defense first.
Has to be.
This, like, if you have Richardson and Thybulle in the starting lineup, you're, like, with all due respect to the two-way play of, like, a Glenn Robinson, right? I think that you have much more versatility in what you can do lineup-wise and defensive matchup-wise when you've got Simmons and Richardson and Thybulle out there versus if you have Thybulle on the bench and you have Horford in the game. You almost don't have options. Like, you almost get slotted into, you know, who you have to have everybody defend. So that's why I like this idea more if Thybulle's coming and being in the starting lineup, Horford's on the bench. And then if you need a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that, you have more pieces to pull from rather than having the starting lineup be default. And I wonder if Thybulle is minimized almost if you're bringing him off the bench. Like, can he make a greater impact early on versus, you know, waiting 3 or 4 minutes to come into the game?
So the other thing that we were asking, and we'll get to our Twitter poll as well on the fifth starter, we'll get Ty, let us know what it looks like on at 975 The Fanatic on Twitter. Road games. So 27 overall.
Yes.
Games remaining. 14 at home, 13 on the road.
Okay.
If you believe that they're going to be the same team at home that we've seen thus far. Mm-hmm. Two losses during the season so far, 14 games remaining. You just say, okay, Tyler said it himself, maybe 11-3. So now you're looking at five losses at home, which is amazing. 36-5
pretty
at
ridiculous.
Home. That's pretty darn good. So if you're talking 11 more wins, mm-hmm. that gives you 45.
Yes.
You assume you're going to get over 50.
Why?
You would assume. Again,
You would assume
that you're still going to get over 50. And if that's the case, you have to win a decent amount on the road as well, where they've struggled at 9-19. So again, 11 games, that's 45. You need five more of the 13. Five, not acceptable. Of the 13.
I mean, but you're on pace for four.
That's who they've been. So I said 7-6. Tyler said 6-7 because that's just who they are, right? And I incorporated this.
Uh-huh.
Bad teams on the road at the end of the season.
Yep, sure.
Bad teams on the road that they've lost to already during the season is different than the end of the season when they're losing games on purpose.
Right.
Even though things have changed with the lottery and all and getting the top pick and everything, they're just going to play younger players that had no business being out there that you should not be beating the Sixers. And they have, but I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt where they're not going to do that again. So in Tyler's scenario, seven more wins on the road, that's 52. Joe, we have others say 9-4 is acceptable. Of course, that'd be great. What's realistic for them? I understand you just said the four. For you, what do you want from them 13 games on the road remaining before this season shuts down on the 15th of April?
I think if they win six, I'll be psyched.
So you're with Tyler.
If they win four, I'll say, yeah, whatever.
I'm not.
And then if they win five, I'm like the meme that like, hey, everything went better than expected. Like that's where I am.
I'm going to lose my mind if they only have four wins.
Let me ask you something. Why though? Right? Like if you have a dog that pees on the floor every single Monday on the Monday, 6 Mondays later, are you really going to be that mad at the dog? Or are you just going to be like, this is what happens? This is like my life now.
Because I expect you to figure it out.
Yeah,
9-19 is already enough evidence for you to be ticked off, look at the film, go back on it, and have some pride and figure it out.
Well,
because a lot of losing on the road is mental, Joe. It's the same talent when they're here in their uniforms under the lighting at the center, when the great stuff is going on in the arena that Derek Hayes, we talk about a lot, does everything in the arena. What's the difference? Do they need Derek to travel to these other arenas and show them something within the arena that look, do they need to play that on the big screen in the locker room before they go out there on the floor and at halftime? The pride. They're the same people, the same play calls, the plays, same sets, maybe tweaked a little bit because the scouting is done by the other team. I would be thoroughly upset if they had four or five games on the road
with
13 to go.
But for me,
with everything else that goes with these teams losing because they're going to play all these different types of players.
But wouldn't you be angry enough if at the point that they were 9-11 on the road, where it's like, hey, we got to get this stuff figured out? So, like, at any point along that timeline, it could have been like the, damn it, this is it, like, moment in the locker room or what. 9-19, to me, that's just like, to me, it's the DNA of the team. By the way, and I pointed this out to you before, I don't think that that means that you're totally screwed in a playoff series either. Because if you're that good at home, you only need one.
You got to steal one.
Just one, though.
Yeah. Like that being said, as good as they are at home, they're playing against the best teams in the playoffs. Their job is to steal one, too.
They've beaten some really good teams at home, though.
Yes, they have.
They've beaten some really good teams.
They've beaten everyone at home, basically. Yeah. Yes.
Just not on the road.
Yeah. Just not on the road.
Four, kind of what I expect. Five, I'm happy. I'm okay. And then six, I'm like, You guys did it. You guys did what you needed to do.
They've done it to me where I need seven.
Oh, man, it hurts.
They've done that to me where I need seven. 610-632-0975. Joe Torre, Devon Givens with you until 10. Joe going until midnight here on the Fanatic. Tyler Zuli producing the show. And one more before we get things going on the phones and get the Twitter poll from Tyler. How dangerous are the Philadelphia 76ers? Once they get into the postseason, do you need the 27 games, Joe, to answer that question, or do you have that answer right now?
No, I don't need it. I don't need the 27 games. They're dangerous. They're still a dangerous
even
team.
Even with everything that we just said, they're still dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely they are.
How dangerous?
I think that if you are, and this sounds so bad, but it is what it is. If at any point the Sixers are in a marquee playoff matchup, I feel really, really good about their chances in it, with one big exception. I'm starting to warm up to the Indiana Pacers series. I'm starting to think that that's like a possibility that the Sixers could handle. The one team...
They have to make a jump, too, if that's going to happen.
If that's going to happen, yeah. In the event that they end up in a playoff series at any point with the Toronto Raptors, I don't think they can win that
series.
You
don't like that.
Right, that
their kryptonite is in Toronto. They cannot win in Toronto.
They can't do it.
And we know they took a game from Toronto in game two of the playoffs, which had us feeling good. Oh, they are going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes.
Because if they do what they do at home, they lose game four, then they're there. But yes.
And then you saw what happened.
And then you saw what happened.
The other problem is, it's not just about they can't win in Toronto. It's that Toronto's got this eye of the tiger, heart of a champion, like, we don't need Kawhi kind of situation going. I don't want to mess with that team at all.
Championship pedigree.
They have it. Like, everybody on the team is playing that way. And the coach is coaching that way. So
everybody's shoulders just drop now, right?
Yeah.
The relief.
Yeah, they're like,
they're
all
good. Right. Oh, we're good. We know how
we
to
can
do
handle this. Yeah. So, Milwaukee's good. Bring on Milwaukee. We were told that this team was built to beat Milwaukee. Let's find out.
Oh, okay. So that's what you mean, bring them on.
Yeah, bring them on.
Not like, we're just going to walk in and beat them.
No.
Bring them on because this is what we were told.
Let's see how that goes. Boston, I still feel kind of good about the Sixers in a series against Boston. I still feel kind of good
about
that.
Maybe I'm a little overconfident, but I do.
I think it's a coin flip against Indy, and I thought it was way worse than that before, so I'm warming up to that now. The Raptors, though.
You don't want any parts of that.
I don't like that one at all. That's really bad.
Okay.
I don't like that one.
All right. Well, Ty, you have an update on the Twitter poll again on 97.5 The Fanatic. You can hit us up on Twitter if you want to hit us up with our Twitter handles at DevonG975 at Joe Torti. Tyler.
So the question is, who do you want to be the fifth starter when the Sixers return to the floor tomorrow against the Nets? 550 votes now. Matisse Thybulle still leading the way. Your guy, 48%. Glenn Robinson in second with 40%. Alec Burks has 8%. Other, the write-in option, has 4%. Most of those write-ins have been Furkan Korkmaz.
Okay.
There's no way that Furkan Korkmaz should be the fifth starter on this team.
No, I think we saw the answer.
Yeah, there's no... the more that you see, the worse. Like, the less that you see of Korkmaz, the better he performs.
As a starter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just mean minutes in general, right? Like, I feel like he is a microwave offense guy. And the longer that he has to, for instance, defend or, work in screen and roll situations, like, the more that you see of that, the worse it gets.
And, as a starter, different. Scouting is different.
Yeah.
They're coming at you right away. When you come in off the bench, you can get a little loose. Different substitutions come in and all that stuff.
Their top five might not be out there.
That's why he's not going to start. That's why he's not going to start.
He can help you off the bench.
Yes, he can. And you can hit Tyler up at Tyler Zuli, two L's, on Twitter as well. 610-632-0975. So, Ramid on Twitter, at Suave Capo, says, Thybulle should be the fifth starter moving forward for defensive reasons, and it gives the bench three shooters to surround Horford with in the bench unit, Korkmaz, Robinson, and Burks, when they come in. But to Mee's point, he's right. You know, you'll get a few of those guys coming in with Horford. You just know that Brett Brown is not going to have a wave of four guys coming in. You think so?
Well, we've kind of seen the line change substitutions
sometimes
happen before.
Yeah, but not the first.
No.
Not the first wave. He'll see how things are going and make that decision and go forward. But, no, I mean, But he's right where you are surrounding him with those shooters. And let's say Harris stays out there.
Mm-hmm.
He's the four and those others. But, you know, Mike Scott is going to mix in at some point as that stretch four.
His role probably shrinks a little bit with the acquisitions, right?
I agree. We've seen him hit big shots, though, when it comes to the postseason.
Yes.
We still have the questions about who Robinson, Korkmaz, Burks, who they are.
Yeah.
He's still, we've seen Mike Scott hit big shots.
Yes, we have.
As bad as the season that he has had so far, not living up to what he did a season ago when he was acquired in that trade, we've seen him hit big shots against the Nets.
Was it game four where no one was playing for the Sixers against Toronto and he was the only one who was hitting any shots? Was that game four or was that a different game?
Game four was here.
There was a game against the Raptors where no one was playing except him. I can't remember which
game it was,
though.
It might have been him.
Yeah.
Because you can talk about the games just in general, right? How things happened early on. It was Embiid playing well in game number one with Redick and Butler. Game two, and they stole that one. Embiid played well. Game three, Embiid was good at home. Not great, but they were able to get the win. Game four
was the collapse game.
That was the collapse game where they gave it up at the end. It was back and forth, but they had the lead going into it late. Kawhi kind of took over at the end. Game five was up there. They had no shot. Game six back here in Philadelphia, Ben Simmons was phenomenal. And game seven, it was just what game seven was.
Yeah, it wasn't game four. I have to remember
what
it was. But yeah, it wasn't game four. I can't remember. But he has been, to your point, a guy who has shown up for the Sixers in the postseason.
Yes.
That has happened.
Small sample size, but we've seen him hit the big shot against the Brooklyn Nets last year in game number five, I believe it was, to close out that series. When he hit, was that the game where they closed the series out? I can't remember exactly. It might have been game four where he hit that shot. They came back to Philadelphia to close out that series in five, if I'm not mistaken. Now you're going to have me look.
Yeah, now we got to go back and look,
exactly.
Dredge up these painful memories here.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we do, right? That's what we do.
There are good ones.
Yeah. 610-632-0975. Joe Torti, Devine Givens, Mike, we see you. You know what? We're going to get to you on the other side to give you all your time. Yes, they won in game five at home. Sixers win that series 4-1. The big shot, Mike Scott hitting that one in game number four where they beat the Nets 112-108. That wasn't the brawl game, no. Jimmy Butler. Yeah, that wasn't the brawl game. But Mike Scott had eight in that game, right?
It's funny
there.
How you associate Mike Scott with the brawl. Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
But he was on the bench. He couldn't come off the bench.
Yeah, this isn't a football tailgate.
610-632-0975. Joe Torre, Devine Givens, Tyler Zulli producing the show. You can hit us up on the poll as well at 975 the Fanatic to tell us who the fifth starter is. Here's Joe Torre right here on the Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
A29, 97.5 The Fanatic. Joe Torte, Devine Givens. Joe Torte hanging out with us until 10.
Yes.
Then I step away. Joe runs
Boo.
Until midnight. I'm sorry.
Yay.
I apologize. Tyler Zulli will be here, though.
Okay, that's cool.
That's cool?
Oh, yeah.
And the people. 610-632-0975.
So much like
Double
Pat
duty.
Egan, much like Pat Egan, I found that an angry Tyler Zulli is one of the more preferable Zullis.
Right? Well, he's been busy today.
Yeah, he has been. He's been really busy. But I've already, probed him before the show, before I hopped on with you, to figure out where he comes down on some things, and I was able to make him pretty angry, like without even saying all that much. So I am looking forward to torturing him from 10 to midnight. Okay. That's going to be a lot of fun.
I'll be listening.
Yes, sir.
Listening for that. And he's tired.
Yes, that makes it even better. Easier to tweak.
Means I'm cranky.
That's right.
Yes. Bring that man some food.
Yeah, this guy does need some food.
He needs some food.
That's, yeah.
No, we're good.
You're
as
good?
You can see.
What's that?
I've got my big bag of rice cakes.
Oh, okay.
There you
That's
go.
Good, yeah.
Knock yourself out.
70% air. All right.
Yes, because I'm not eating that. Let's go to, I'm telling you guys about the Fanatic Pro Shop. You want to outfit yourself with some cool Fanatic and Philly sports swag? Lots of Fanatic and Philly sports team theme merch at great prices, from hoodies to long sleeve tees, mugs, caps, phone cases, tanks, and a lot more. The Fanatic Pro Shop has something for everyone, including our lady listeners, with unique Fanatic and Philly designs. Go to 975thefanatic.com and check out the Fanatic Pro Shop. Open now.
And if you don't see the Devon Givens full face t-shirt / hooded sweatshirt on the Pro Shop website, there should be an email contact that you can fill out to make sure that you're able to get that in a timely manner. In time, yeah, you missed it for Valentine's Day. I mean, that's the gift that any lover would like for Valentine's Day. But there's still time to get it ahead of time for St. Patrick's Day. So make sure you check that out.
I'm unaware of this.
Well, yeah, you got to send the email, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you got to check that out.
I'm sure people do not want that. Just to say, you know, you do not want that.
The big Devon Givens face.
I do believe we should get a crossover one, though. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, I'd be on with that. We do this enough.
They made us take the photos before, remember?
Yes, I do remember this.
We had to take the show photos.
Yeah, the promo photos and stuff of us holding nothing and, you know, pointing to nothing and stuff like that.
Yes.
For the graphic design people to work their magic.
Yes. It's like when you go to, let's say, France.
And
you're
going
to act like your hand is holding the Eiffel Tower.
Okay,
or
nice.
Like that,
there you go.
Isn't that what we did? It's basically.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
It's exactly like that.
Except I'm in all of the pictures, you'll notice that it's us because, like, I'm sitting there grinning like an idiot. And Devon is looking into the camera like, I would rather literally be anywhere else other than right here at this point. So you'll know it's us.
610-632-0975. It was a good time.
It was a good time. We had a
loved
blast.
It. Let's go to Mike and Cherry Hill next on the Fanatic. Hey, Mike.
I was going to try to be positive, but Joe just kept driving me. I'm going to have to blame him again.
Uh-oh.
You know, it's just bad. It's bad, man. And I was telling Zuli that, you know, I was thinking that we might make a little run again like we did a couple of years ago with the 16. You remember that? It
seems 16
like
in a row.
Years ago. It seems like 30 years ago now, considering where we are. But, you know, I was going to blame Joe, but I got to blame you, Devon, too, because you're partially responsible for this because you endorsed that horrible signing.
Yes, I did.
It was bad news. I mean, it's grating on your credibility as a commentator, which you are one of the better 76ers. It's probably one of the best in the area, but
thank you.
Grating on your credibility if you
it is not
make those types of endorsements. But
it's,
you know,
okay for me to backtrack and say I was wrong, and I did. So
well,
I get my credit back.
Again, falling on the sword does not give you any credit. Your partner tried to do that many a times, and it hasn't helped him out at all. So, but I would say I want to bring your attention back to the All-Star game. I know you saw Embiid do that dream shake,
the best one I've seen
on LeBron in the when the game got ratcheted up. They were playing for something. The kids were hyped, and he brings that big body down into the post. And he shakes off LeBron like a bad habit, and he shoots that little baby jumper. It looks great. I'm like, where is that at? And so if I said, man, if we're going to make a run, like I hope we do in 16, play to the player's strength.
Let me jump in, because I agree with you, and I said it when we came back from the All-Star weekend, that I thought, I've seen this before, and that was the best one that I've ever seen him do with that dream shake that he's done plenty of times. Now, to your point about where is it when he's playing with the 76ers, he should do it more. Look at the spacing that he had, because he had who he had out there on the floor with him. Kemba Walker, Kyle Lowry, and so on and so forth. All of those talented players, where this team is talented, But until they prove that they are going to knock down those shots from the perimeter and break down the defense the way that they do, you know how it is, man. Even though that was an all-star game, they were manning up on everybody because there was so much, the level of talent was crazy on the floor at that time.
I agree, and that's why it goes back to, you know, your bad endorsement of bringing another big in to cloud the paint. I mean, this guy, he always had that in him. He just needs to be told in a lot of different ways in terms of strategy, Devon, to make those type of moves. He has a great touch for a big man, and if he can do three or four dream shakes a night, imagine where the offense will be. I agree with spacing the floor. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that we're beyond that. But again, the bad guys that we brought in, Little Dog and all these guys that can't shoot, I think we need to just bring in some shooters, space the floor, a la that All-Star game. That was the strategy on how the 76ers can win.
Yeah, now, and Mike, thanks for the call, man. We weren't as bad as you made us out to be.
I'm beyond help.
Oh, you're good?
Apparently.
Okay, yeah, you are.
Help.
You're done. He said he didn't want to get to you tonight. He came at me, and that's okay. We love Mike calling in from Cherry Hill quite often to get on us about some of our takes. It's the spacing helps out, of course, for him to do that. If he does that a little bit more, as Mike is talking about, he's always going to get a double team because he's already who he is.
Right.
If he starts to make those types of shots and he get the movement away from the ball when the double team comes to make it an easier pass for him, then it's a success. He has to locate it, whether they finish or not, get to the free throw line. It's a plus. It's a positive play for the team in general. He made a concerted effort to, number one, in my opinion, he knew it. This is the other difference, Mike and Joe and Tyler. He knew it was LeBron James.
Of course, right? Yeah. He gets way up for
I'm getting
that.
Up for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm
going to
do this against LeBron.
Which is why I said anytime the Sixers are in a premier, like a marquee playoff matchup, I like their chances because Embiid's going to be locked in more than he's going to be locked in against the Brooklyn Nets.
And we've said that a lot because they have so many primetime games now.
Yes.
He hasn't done it in all of them.
Not in all of them. That's true.
We say it. Hey, this is a primetime game. We're going to get the best of Embiid. We don't all the time.
Not always.
Not always.
In the postseason, I bet you do.
Yeah.
I bet you do.
Okay. I mean, well, listen. Saturday, 8:30, mm-hmm. Milwaukee.
Doesn't get any bigger.
Tomorrow's a primetime game because it's a TNT game.
Yes.
Brooklyn at home.
I wonder why. I wonder why they're doing that.
What's that?
Do you think that they're just trying to, like, not just TNT, but all of the big-time broadcast networks. You think that they're trying to snuggle up to the Nets because of KD next year, and they want to have the good relationship with the Nets for next year?
Well, number one, are you talking about all the primetime games?
Yeah, like ESPN, TNT.
Kyrie Irving. You knew Durant was going to be out.
Yeah, you did. That's
what
I'm saying.
But Kyrie Irving was supposed to be there.
Right.
He has been injured.
Yes. Okay.
So it takes away from them. In that regard.
That dude's a big draw. He really is.
He is. Now, next year, 40 games. Prime
time. Half their season's going to be on prime time.
Absolutely. Same thing with the Sixers.
Yep.
They're going to be there once again, all of these teams, prime time because you have the star power that you do.
I don't know how much better the Sixers can do in terms of acquiring shooters, though. Like, I don't know who you think
now?
Is available. I mean, Alec Burks is a 36% career three-point shooter.
I guess you just wait
Glenn
to see what happens with the buyout period one more before it gets here, March 1st. We only have a few more days left before that is out. But
right.
Now you're starting to see some names trickle out. Reggie Jackson buyout with the Detroit Pistons. He's apparently, like everybody else, is going to sign with the L.A. Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone else, I haven't heard any shooting names.
But I guess what I'm saying is, I know you can never have enough shooting, but haven't they addressed it to the point where you're like,
the best that they could?
It's way better than it was.
It is.
You know?
And to the best that they are able to do.
Right.
Because you can't predict all the time. You can predict some what the buyout market is going to be. We have not heard Bellinelli, Ilyasova type names.
The same guys who get waived every single year.
Yeah, right?
Know? Yeah. Yeah. You haven't heard it.
So I think that they are who they are. At this point, and this is what you're going to rock with.
But they've got Mike Scott, Furkan Korkmaz, Glenn Robinson III, and Alec Burks all coming off the bench. Like, how much more shooting is supposed to come off your bench, I guess is what I'm saying, right? Like, how many more guys are you supposed to have that can fill it up from the outside?
And not for nothing, Can Tobias Harris be the shooter that they anticipated him to be?
Can Josh Richardson take the step that we anticipated that he was going to take, you know, in every facet, but shooting included? You know, you got guys in your starting lineup that need to do the job before you worry about finding more shooting.
And if they do their job, we're not talking about finding more shooting.
Exactly.
610-632-0975. This is where they are. This is where we are until 10 o'clock here on the Fanatics. 610-632-0975. George, we'll get to you first when we get back. That's Joe Torti. I'm Devon Givens. Tyler Zuli is producing the show. We're talking Sixers. Wide range when it comes to how dangerous they are going into the postseason. Their road record with the final 13 road games that they have. Where should it be? And who should that fifth starter be in place of Al Horford? 610-632-0975. Joe Torti's up next right here on the Fanatics.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
It is 8:45 on this Wednesday night, 97.5 The Fanatic. Joe Torti, Devon Givens with you until 10 o'clock together. 610-632-0975.
Hello.
Twitter poll on 97.5 The Fanatic. You know, as we talk about all of this. Oh, man. Brian just sends a... Did you see the t-shirt?
See, there it is. Yeah, except it's on the back, you know? But Brian's almost got it there. That's concept art. There you go. Nicely done, Brian. Thank you.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. Too funny. Puts my face on the t-shirt. No one wants that, Brian. Except for Joe Torti.
Well, I mean, let's let the free market decide who wants that.
Don't put that out.
Just tell people.
It's already out there. But don't
yeah,
put
I was
going
to say, come on, man, it's over.
So you're saying don't retweet it from the station.
That's too late. It's too late.
Too funny. Too hilarious. Tyler Zuli, what is the Twitter poll?
So the question for our Twitter poll is we're talking about the fifth starter for the Sixers coming up. So the question was, who do you want to be the fifth starter when the Sixers take the court?
Zach Eflin. Oh, wait, wrong sport.
Wrong team. We'll get to that one.
Oh, all right. Yeah, all right.
When they take the court against the Nets, 631 votes. Matisse Thybulle now has 49% of the vote. Glenn Robinson III, 41. Alec Burks, 7%. Right in, 3%.
That's Furkan Korkmaz. Still ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the choice. Like, that's... If you... Here's my deal, right? If you are drafting a guy in the first round, you should feel like... And you trade up for him. You should feel like you want to start that guy versus either of two people that you were able to pry off of a garbage team.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, you should feel way more passionate about starting Thybulle than Glenn Robinson or Alec Burks. You know, with all due respect to those guys. That's your dude. Matisse.
Yeah, pretty good player. Not bad. Here's a good one. Delco Pete.
Yes.
Pete Braverman. The station knows nothing but Sixers. It's insanity. Hockey is so much better than the NBA. Delco Pete, I don't know if you paid attention, but Andrew and Tyler were talking about it. Hockey. Mike and...
Yeah, but then we got roasted on Twitter for talking hockey.
Exactly.
So.
Mike and Tyrone were talking about it.
I probably talked about hockey for 75% of my show yesterday after the Flyers game.
You did post-game following the Flyers?
Yes. It's about 75% Flyers.
Yeah, I guess he doesn't pay attention.
It might be too late.
Yeah, because... So here's the point. The station knows nothing but Sixers. It's insanity. Hockey is so much better than the NBA. I guess you're not tuned in when the hockey talk happens. No one wants to talk about it, so you shift back to the Sixers. Just saying. 610-632-0975 when you try to give the Flyers, even after the games, you know, the love coming off of a nice win last night, Joe Torty, where you talk 75%, and you get calls, but then you have to back away and go elsewhere because the calls stop. Yeah. They want to talk about the Sixers. I don't know. Just saying, Delco Pete. Let's go to George in Mount Laurel, next on the Fanatic. What's up, George?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good,
great,
man.
George,
how are you?
Thank you.
Good. I feel that the second half is going to tell the tale for the playoffs. I feel still that Ben Simmons is going to be the weak point. Defenses with the Celtics, the Raptors, Milwaukee. I know I heard you guys talking about those guys. I think they're just going to take him out of the game. They're not going to let him drive. They're going to force him to shoot the ball, and we all know that he doesn't shoot the ball. So I don't know how far they're going to go. I think it's going to be the second half is going to tell the story.
Do you think that despite Simmons's limitations as an outside shooter, the fact that they were committed to exploring trades for Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks, and obviously they'll be keeping an eye on the buyout market, you don't think that there's a chance that they addressed the weakness on the team from the perimeter for Ben?
I think they did a little bit. I think they could have did more. I just don't like the spacing on the floor when Simmons gets cut off at the basket. I don't know if they make good enough decisions. Embiid turns the ball over too much when he gets the ball down on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel that he can find that open body, no matter who it is. I just don't think he finds that body.
And that's what we talk about, man, with that spacing being there in the All-Star game versus being with the Sixers. Can it happen? Can the guys cut and find those open spots? But most importantly, can he locate that player cutting, hit them in stride, give them the opportunity to either get the bucket themselves or get fouled or make that extra pass for the bucket to happen at the rim or the perimeter? And it's up to him and Simmons. And you're right, George, that until we see him change, Simmons, in the postseason and adapt to what they do because he is not going to shoot the ball, can he make the right decision when that wall is built from whoever the opponent is and not turn the ball over, still get quality looks, and change his thought process offensively where it may not be, George, a jump shot, but as we've been talking about, that floater, that little teardrop, that push shot right there from about 12 feet out where they stop him, make that little teardrop shot, and make them think, uh-oh, you know, now we have to think of a new wrinkle.
I can't agree with you more.
Thanks for the call, George. Appreciate it, man. And that's the thing, man, just simply asking, and I say it all the time. Forget about the fact that he's 6'10", and that be an excuse as to why he doesn't shoot a teardrop or a floater. One of the best teardrops I see in the NBA right now, of course, Kevin Durant. He's an elite scorer. That's what he does. Jokic, so talented offensively.
He's got every shot
slow
in there. Yeah.
Exactly. He finds a way to get that teardrop 1 foot runner.
He's got that
off,
YMCA game.
Jokic, and it's beautiful.
Does. Yeah, it's really cool.
He's a center. You can do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, you can do it.
I'm with you.
When they play against the Atlanta Hawks and everybody gets ticked off because Trae Young is destroying you the way Trae Young is destroying you from deep 35 feet out shooting from the hash mark, but then he gets into that interior, he probes a little bit, gets you on the hip, gets you on his back, and then he just gives you that floater right there from the right wing, free throw line extended, and you're like, yo, my man, you got a soft touch too. Right hand and left hand.
Right.
Do it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
I do. I know exactly what you mean.
So, yeah, see, now we're about to get into that and not trying to get into that, but that's where he can help his team out.
Yeah. And we've been calling for that for a long time, to have that be the shot or a shot that you add, right? And here's what's frustrating about it is that it's not a new shot.
No.
But it is a shot that is, if you watch... And I'll bring up why I'm saying this in a second. If you watch the next generation of players, they all have it.
Everyone has a teardrop.
So I called a high school basketball game a little while ago, a couple weeks
about
back.
About 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Sierra Canyon, Bronny James' school, and Lehigh, Long Island Lutheran in New York. Really, really good schools. I'm not joking. There was a period where back, forth, four straight possessions ended with one of those guys hitting the same running teardrop floater in the lane. And it was different guys on each trip. Everybody uses it. Everybody has it. Everybody knows the players are getting bigger. They're getting longer. You've got to find a way to be able to get that shot up, the giant killer shot, so that you don't get it packed.
And his advantage to your bigger and longer for the defender, he's big and long in terms of his height. He's 6'10". He has long wingspan. And he can jump.
So here's the thing.
Just don't jump into the body. Jump straight up.
At the risk of sounding like overly dramatic, right? There are only so many truly indefensible shots, right? I can think of two. If you can think of more, give them to me. The sky hook.
That no one does.
That no one does. And Dirk Nowitzki's fadeaway jumper being 7 damn feet tall.
The one footer.
Yeah, the one.
Because you're afraid to get kicked in your gut.
Yeah.
When
and
Dirk
you can't
does
go
it,
get him. You don't want to foul him.
Because you're going to foul him.
Okay. If Ben Simmons were to develop a floater at his height
6'10".
With his touch.
Well, some say he's 7 foot.
I would argue that that is only the third indefensible shot in NBA history. If he, like you said, doesn't commit offensive fouls, if he can do it off a jump stop, if he can stop his forward momentum and he's not going to run people over, I don't think that it's an overstatement to say that it would literally change his entire game. It would change everything about who
open
he is.
Open some
as a
things
scorer.
Up.
Oh my gosh. It'd be unreal.
Mm-hmm.
So people understate, I think, how important that is.
That's a pretty good shot. 6-1-0.
Are there more indefensible shots?
Let me think about that during the break.
Get you on it.
I would say those are it, but let me think about that during the break. 610-632-0975. Right off the bat, I'll say Kevin Durant's fadeaway.
Really good.
And his Dirk. 610-632-0975. Joe Torre, Devon Givens, Bilal. We'll get to you when we get back. Tyler Zulli producing the show, the 9 o'clock hour upcoming, right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.